Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street, Blog Talk Radio. I am speaking to you live from Washington, D.C. My name is Bilal Masadiq Bynum, along with my other host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Greetings. How you doing, my brother?
Everything's pretty good, brother. Aziz, how are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, pretty good.
All right, and look like we got another talking about disasters. Boy, I guess the sister call of it, definitely having our disasters. And last week was an example, especially over there in Bowie, about what we were talking about. Everybody over there is quite fortunate. Tornado did not destroy any home. It just destroyed a lot of trees. But wasn't that something? How many trees fell?
I know.
Missed the homes.
I mean, a lot of them. And I think about that stuff too, you know.
Matter of fact, I was over in Bowie today. And I was watching the cleanup. And I said, man, it's really amazing. This tornado came through here, but again, those are the disasters that we're talking about, preparing for the disaster and then being able to recover from the relief of the disaster. And I'm saying and that we have a FEMA representative or a FEMA person that can that's directing us. But I'm saying the true example of what this sister's been telling us. So I can...
Yes, indeed.
So those of us who... we should be signing up. We should be signing up for the class. And these classes are going to be starting here pretty soon. And I think Sister Aisha looked like she might be with us already, so I'll be turning the show back over to her and here in just a few. But yes, Brother Aziz, last night was a perfect example. and I'm saying this is just the beginning, and the season hasn't gotten serious, but can you imagine this hot weather and how warm those oceans are out there? And then they're saying it's a good possibility, and we might have another one tonight. They're not looking at it as severe, but really they don't know.
Mm.
So so this training that we're talking about receiving again, preparing for these terrible disasters. And then being able to recover, and not only recover for oneself, but you'll be able to help to recover in many, many different areas, different zones. Zones can be many, many, many states. I got a flyer today. And I'm going to speak to Sister Aisha about it because I think it's the organization that she may have sent Sister Williams to be a part of. And they got our flyer. And they sent a greetings back to us. And it's like, I'm going to speak, see if she received, tell her about it. And I'm going to send that email. I'm going to just send that email out. But I got a feeling that this could be the program that she's been on, that she may have Sister Williams into, but again, I think it's fine. But. Otherwise, if you have any comments, I'm going to turn it over to you for your general comments, and then I'm going to give everybody a chance to start calling in, and we'll turn it over to our host.
Yes, Brother Lyle. I was going to say, in general, I'm just trying to look for, you know, all the outlets where we can inform people about this disaster preparation and recovery course that's being taught. Because, as you said, this weather that we had last night and weather that we know we're going to have in the future, people aren't not prepared for it, you know. It was just fortunate last night in that buoy that the majority of the trees were down in the driveways or on the streets and knocked down some power lines. But for sure, the people wasn't prepared for that. You know, when the warning came, buoys about 30 miles from where we are, but this whole area was under alert last night. Right, and nobody knew where it was going to hit. So, and, you know, and all you could do is, you know, they said to lock down, you know, get in a safe area and be aware, you know, because it could drop down on you anywhere. So when you have that kind of warnings going out and uncertainty about where, then everybody should be prepared, no matter where it may fall or hit, you know. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to, you know, for us helping push this program on out there so that Summit, you know, can really get to the people and give them what they need to be prepared for these upcoming disasters. And this is going to be there for sure, brother, for sure. But you know, other than
and the thing about it, Brother Aziz, that was an EF, that was an EF1.
Yes, that's right.
An EF1 did that type of damage. And we know most of these tar, and I was thinking, I said, now just think, they said the EF1 with winds around 100 miles an hour. Just think it was an EF4 or an EF5. How does and if a one can do this type of disaster, and we know we ain't going to get too many ones, how in the world, you know, what happens when these great big tornadoes come through, EF4s and 5s, with winds over 200 miles an hour? I mean, how can anybody, anything, survive such a disaster? But again, like I said, that was an indication. And so we still have time to know how to deal with experts that can help us. And then, and so helping yourself, you're able to train and help many, 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 many others. And it could be a financial reward for those of us who have the proper training. So with that said, I am going to go ahead to our sister and our expert here. Sister Aisha, if you're with us, good evening to you. Assalamu alaikum.
To everyone. It's certainly it's an honor to be here tonight. And yes, we are feeling extreme heat down here in North Carolina as well. I want to correct something that I said. I think it was last week. You know, we are in the data business, collecting data. So we want to make sure we have our research numbers correct. But I failed to say, I stated that over 126 million people are forced into poverty every year as a result of natural disasters. I failed to say that globally, 126 million people are forced into poverty as a result of natural disaster. I did not intend to imply that that was in the U.S., but that's a global, that was global. Okay. So I just want to put that out there and make sure I correct myself. We have data checkers on in our operation, people who are constantly checking data and And one of them heard me say that, and so they set me. They said, no, that wasn't correct. So, alhamdulillah, we thank Allah that we are able to make those correct. the extreme heat is a major problem for us down here. And as I stated some time before, the consequences of a storm or a disaster, and extreme heat is, of course, a disaster. It can span over 1,000 miles. So if it starts on the East Coast, it could very well go all the way to that would be the Midwest, because from one end of the country, from the east to the west, is 3,500 miles roughly. So if you have a storm, it could very well impact the middle part of the country. If it starts on the East Coast, if it impacts the middle part of the country, extreme heat, the consequences of extreme heat causes other issues. So if you're in the middle of the country, one of the consequences is extreme drought. Extreme drought causes forest fires. So although it started on the East Coast, it could spread 1,000 miles, which will go into the middle part of the U.S., right, close to the middle part.
Mm-hmm.
And that can cause on the extreme western part, it could cause the fires and the drought and the other issues. So when we see one situation developing in one part of the country, we must understand that nothing is isolated. We're just one big open space in this country. Actually, we're just one big open space in the world, but we are talking about this country. So we can never think because Region 4, which is the North Carolina, South Carolina, the other areas, we can never think that a tornado in our region will not have dire consequences in the other region. And in the training, we have a picture. Our people put together a graphic picture showing how that takes place. And so we wanted it to be very visual, so people won't forget how one situation is gonna affect another situation, or cause another situation that will reverberate and cause another situation. And we are seeing that happening all over. If you all remember, I think it was Hurricane Isaac on the East Coast of the U.S., do you know that it caused a disruption in West Africa? Can you imagine that?
Mm.
Because wow. West Africa from the U.S. is within that mileage of 1,000 miles. So it was very interesting when we saw that that graphic design. So we must become very knowledgeable. There's a lot of information out there. There's so much information out there by the federal government, the different departments. It's almost mind-boggling. And the language is language that's very difficult to interpret. You see one thing one day and wonder what direction that's going in. So we have to stay focused on our desire to learn the language of climate change and become proactive in securing our communities and making sure we're at the table when the funds come in and the decisions are being made on the allocation of the funds and the purpose for the funds. That's where we have to be. Because we truly do need to become a part of, I will say part of the team, but we realize that basically in America we have never been a part of the team. But we have to educate ourselves. And by the grace of God, this training, it's going to start with us where we are. And we all are pretty much at the same level. There are very few people in our environment that that we can go to and say, let's have this conversation about climate change and what we can do about it. And these people are our leaders. They're the officials, the public officials. They know basically some of the jargon of it, but they don't have any solutions, and they don't have any solutions on how to become included. And we want to be included. You become included by having the knowledge. So when we look at the, and please, anybody online, ask the question, stop me at any point, and we'll talk about, try to respond to your comments or your questions. So we are looking at August, the month of August. We know that every region in the U.S. will receive minimally 1.2 million, which is a small amount. But that small amount is designated for capacity building. Capacity building is having projects, actionable projects, to inform people, to educate people in the mitigation of climate change disasters. That's preparedness. And that's what the workshop is all about, teaching the people how to be prepared, what they have to do, what they have to have. And with this information, it is adequate enough initially for us to be at the table talking about the allocation of resources that will be coming from the federal government through FEMA, FEMA down to the state mitigation offices, the state mitigation offices to the county and local government in their state. So that's the path. And we can. Now, from what I'm understanding from communication this past week, one of the biggest issues, and I stated this last week, that FEMA said that since 2013, preparedness has only increased by 2%. And that is a terrible saga when you think that they have been around since, what, 89? And I might have that wrong. But they have been around a long time. But they have not been able to move this nation to a high level of disaster preparedness. They increased since 2013 only by 2%, and they put that data out. So now the emphasis is on community involvement, community participation, getting it at the community level. And it's unfortunate that it has taken them this long to recognize that things began, movements are take place in this country on the community level. That has been a historical momentum of any movement in this country. No. And they did not start on the community level. They started on the academia, academia. They started in the high-level for-profit and non-profit. And that did not work. So now their emphasis, they're putting together a lot of webinars, so many that my email, I have 4 and 5, 6 and 7 every day, new webinars. But the information is not new. And the language that they are dispensing this information is not new. It's the same old language that does not include the community. So we, as a group of people who are going to be found by the grace of God, trained in the basics, and that's all preparedness is. It's the basics. We will be in a tremendously great position to sit at the table and make decisions on the approaches on how to build capability within our society. And this is what they are asking for. They truly are asking for us to be at the table because they don't have the answers and they don't have the direction. And they stated they didn't have the direction because since 2013 they haven't been able to mobilize the society beyond 2% to be prepared. So if anyone have any questions, any statements?
Yes, I was just trying to get in touch with Miss Williams because she's also an example of what happens when you start the training. Because you sent her to one of the she represented you at one of famous training facility
yes.
in a certain region. As a matter of fact, I think I got an email, and I'm going to send it over to you, and it said, and this is from FEMA, and FEMA sent us an email welcoming our website, and also their website is almost like saying they are ready to work with us and our group. So we have also, FEMA's already, and I got several emails of where I got folks were thanking me for sending out the flyer that we sent out. So it seems like we're getting attention, but our response is just not coming from our community like we wanted to. But we are. And like I said, that announcement we sent out, I got emails that I just got here within a day or so. And the one I'm looking at right now is directly from, this is FEMA. And they're talking
forwarded it over, and I would love to take a look at it. That's what we want.
Yes. Well, I got it. I'm going to be sending it over to you, and I'm going to send it out. But I didn't want to send it out until I sent it over to you. But we are getting a response. And like you said, sister, I think the reason we're getting such a response is because you're saying it. They're looking for assistance and help from community groups. And this is an example. Knowing that we have put this, what we've put out, and they know what we're doing. Like I said, they're asking that, they're looking forward to our upcoming websites, and they're telling us they have their websites, and they mention, again, the regions. As a matter of fact, this particular message is coming from Region 2. I swear, this particular, and like I said, this is our representative of FEMA. So I'll be sending it over to you. But brothers and sisters.
Region 2 is, You know, Region 2 is New Jersey, New York, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands.
Yes, that's where this is coming from. This
yes.
is exactly where it's coming from. And,
okay.
So again, everything you've been saying looks like it's coming to coming to light. So my thing is that, and we all know, is that we need the numbers, the registration,
yes.
the registration. Yes, and we know there's a registration fee. But if that registration fee has anything to do, anyone who cannot afford it, because we need the numbers, not
yes.
so much the money, but the numbers. And if you have a problem with that registration fee, I'm just, for some of you that just cannot afford the registration fee, then we're asking you to just simply put together your group. And putting together your group, you're just putting together a group and their email, because the group is numbers. And if you put together a group of at least five or more, New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street will pay that registration fee. And Sister Aisha, I've already talked to her about it. If we have to, it will be waived. But we just need the numbers, and Sister Aisha will tell you what to do once you have those numbers and how you get that information.
Yeah.
She'll be discussing that in just a second. But brothers and sisters, we need the numbers. Sister Aisha, look like I do see Sister Williams, Director Williams, out of Oklahoma, and I also think we have our director out of Delaware. So we want to
yes,
greet all our directors. We want to greet
yes.
all our
go
directors.
Go right ahead.
And we'll start with Sister Swan in Delaware. Greetings, Sister Swan. Are you with us?
Greetings. Yes. Can you hear me?
Very well.
Yes,
very well. We've been missing you.
Well, I busy times. You know your sister.
I know.
But
I know.
Our baby sister Joyce told me I have no choice. No matter what my busyness is, she said you will be on next Wednesday. So you better believe when baby sister speaks up.
Well, let me tell you,
I follow her orders.
We're going to hear from Joyce right now, because Joyce, like I said, is ahead of most of us, even ahead of me. Because she has already gone to, and she was officially in one of the FEMA programs,
yes.
and the way she gave her report last week, it shows how intelligent the information that is being given, and how excited.
Mm-hmm.
We are, and let me say, my sister Joyce is no dummy. I mean, none of my family is. All of them got master's degrees. But I'm saying, to hear her give that report and to put so much of herself into that report, I haven't heard that from her in a long time. And that's why I know that, man, we're into something here. And like I said, the information that is being taught is valuable information, because not only is FEMA asking that we join their seminars and training and continue our training, but at the end, there is many, many grants and other rewards that they would be more than happy to share, and including allocating large amounts of monies to our communities, but our communities cannot get those funds. That's why we need the numbers, because without the numbers, those funds will not come to our community. But again, I'm not an expert. I've been around the experts. I've listened to the experts, and that's why I can share a certain information. But with that said,
oh, I know.
Again, go right ahead, Sister Swan, if that's you.
Well, on May 25th, that was my first presentation on the disaster preparation, and I had told our listening audience that I would continue that series in the hopes that they would have their notebooks ready to take notes on whatever would be helpful and help in getting ready for these disasters. They are going to happen, but the steps that can be immediately taken, personal steps that can be immediately taken to at least have basic preparation for these disasters. So that was on May 25th, and at that time I did a presentation in five parts on the most basic need, and that of course is water. So if anyone did not get a chance to hear that presentation, it was in five parts on the most basic of all preparations on water, I'd be glad to go over that again at some time. Now, I do know that when I did that particular one on water, it's a different one tonight. I talked first on just the supply. What do you need in terms of a 3-day supply? Basically, you want to look at 3 days. You may extend it beyond that. I also talked about how to store your water properly and how to prepare your containers so that they will be safe and so that they will be durable. We also talked about the types of plastics, because some plastics are not durable, and as soon as you put your very precious water in them, it's going to leak out, time wasted, effort wasted. And we also talked about the difference between commercially stored water and that which you can prepare on your own, and how to prepare water if it's coming from the faucet and not from some system that's using the chlorine. So those things I'd be happy to go over and re-talk about at some point. But since this is my second presentation, it is on disaster preparation involving food. And if you don't mind, I'd like to present that to our listening audience.
And we're going to look forward to it, and we're going to make certain you get plenty of time. As a matter of fact, Sister Aisha is hearing you as we speak. She has been asking specifically for you. So I'm certain she's going to look forward to you being a part of her team. Now I am going to switch over to Oklahoma, and Oklahoma Director Williams, are you with us?
Good evening, everyone, and assalamu alaikum to my brothers.
Walaikum salam.
Yes, sir.
And I am going to now have you and Sister Aisha continue, and we will interject as we listen. So, Sister Aisha, I think I'm going to let you take it over with Miss Williams, and also you have Miss Swan, both of your assistants.
Good evening to Joyce and Miss Swan. I'm so glad that you are back. I missed you also, just like everyone else. And the information, my dear sister, that you bring to the table is invaluable information. And I am so impressed with your knowledge base. And you say many things that I have to learn from. And so I look forward to it. I look forward to your presentation. Realizing that in the class, I want to talk to you offline because we need other people who can conduct the training online. I do believe that very soon we're going to have the numbers where we have to offer more and more classes. And I would like to talk to you about that, the same as Sister Joyce, because we need the people who have the knowledge base and can do so. So I will one day, if it's okay with you, I would like to give you a call, and we set up a time to talk. How is that?
I look forward.
Good, very good. right. Welcome, Sister Joy. We're not going to take so much time because we do want Sister Juan to have time to make her presentation. But, Joyce, I would like for you to tell us how you going into those classes, what has it done to your empowerment in this area?
Thank you, sister, for that question, because I'm going to tell you something. Sisters and brothers of the New African Business Association and Black Belt Wall Street, this lady, Sister Aisha right here, this woman, this person, this individual, she has exposed us to an opportunity. If we miss out on this, we might as well just go on and get on the corner and just have a can or a card or something in our hands and say, can you help me? Because, brothers and sisters, this FEMA, I feel and believe it incorporates all the agencies in terms of it being the, and you know, one of the things that you do when you're doing your research, you have to know what these acronyms and things stand for.
Yeah.
So I looked it up, and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, I believe that all federal agencies at some point report to them in some way or another. But if you don't mind, I would like to share with you what I was exposed to today as far as attending their workshops, seminars, luncheons, and things of this nature. But today I attended the National CERT Conference Lunch and Learn Session. And they're planning for their national conference in association with the National CERT Partnership FEMA Region 6. Region 6, of course, being Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, so forth. And it's hosted by Galveston CERT program, and it will be held August 18th through the 20th with a pre-conference training from the 18th through the 17th. It's going to be held at the Galveston Convention Center, St. Louis Resort. So it sounds like it's going to be an interesting, knowledgeable, as well as fun activity. Today's presentation, however, provided an overview of the conference and who should attend. Although we are all invited, this conference is of particular interest to program managers, instructors, volunteers, and other stakeholders in your communities. So if anyone's interested in an effective tool to prepare your community members for all hazards, should attend this particular conference. And like I said, it's going to be in Galveston between August 18th through August 20th. Now, who should attend this particular conference? You got your train-the-trainer classes, program managers, program instructors, volunteers, and they're going to be going over various training modules. They even talked about pilots from FAA being in attendance. So there's going to be a wide range of attendees at this particular conference, and you will be able to, as they used to say, pick someone's brain. There'll be several, many various agencies with their representatives there whose brains we can pick. That Friday night, they're going to have what they call a plated dinner. You know, that's where you're going to have your banquet. They're going to have entertainment, karaoke, along with your dinner. those of us who will be attending, they will have from Hobby Airport shuttle services that will come back and forth between the conference and the hotel, or the airport, rather. And you'll get your nationalcertification.org. The conference itself is $330. Volunteers are $225, and then they were talking about another way of having your attendance. So then they had a survey at the end of the luncheon. It was only a half hour, but they did have a survey that I filled out requesting more information across the board, whatever they're sending out. I feel that perhaps we should maybe get a glimpse of it at least. So I filled out the information for us to start receiving there, like a newsletter or whatever. Then they also had other preparedness and resilience topics will be discussed there at the conference. And also, brothers and sisters, now, next Tuesday, next week, Tuesday, I think that's the 16th, I'm not for certain. But anyway, next Tuesday, I'll also be attending the Civil Rights Before, During, and After a Disaster, okay? And these are things, Sister Aisha, again, I want to thank you. I thank Allah for sending you our way. So that we could get this information to have to share with our various communities. Because this, I mean, we hear about it every day, but we don't necessarily take it into our internalize it, I'll say. But now that we're being exposed to what they actually do and how we prepare before, do it, as well as after a disaster, I feel that we have really been tapped into information that we can really use, not only for our homes, but for our extended sales. So next Tuesday, I'll be attending the Civil Rights Before, During, and After Disasters discussion, and it will focus on the role of civil rights and equity in all phases of disaster. Brothers and sisters, that's my report for this particular week, and I'm hoping that someone, one of us, two of us, five of us, however many of us who can attend this conference from the 18th through the 20th of August, if we can go. I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Now,
realizing that region 6 is your region, Sister Joyce, right?
That's true.
That's the region you live in.
That's true.
And so I guess you're going to be one of the individuals who's going to be the pioneer in region 6.
That's right.
That represent our group.
That's right.
Yes, ma'am.
And Sister Aisha, okay. May I also say that Sister Williams' report, and I was just telling you, FEMA sent us a flyer. Everything Sister Williams said is in this flyer. I do believe her attending these conferences, because I know that either her attendance did this or our announcement did this. But whatever the case may be, Region 2 called on to what we're doing, and it's Region 2 that's sponsoring all the information that Sister Williams is just sharing with me, and everything she talked about, I'm reading right here as she speaks. So I'll be sending this out, but
yes.
I'll be sending this out, but in other words, my emphasis is this. What Sister Williams have discovered, we need 100 others to have discovered the same thing. We need 100 directors to be doing what Sister Wim and the rest of us as directors should be doing, and that is a really picking up the knowledge directly from the government. So again, yeah. Like I said, everything she just spoke of, I'm reading right here from FEMA's own flyer in their upcoming webinar. So with that, I'm going to turn it right back to you two. But Ms. Williams, thank you so much for your report. Beautiful report. But so, like I said, we need 100 of you at least. Because remember, this is region two. We have four other regions, and like you said, the region that Miss Williams live in, they probably need representatives and help because they can't make a report from that region. They don't have anybody that's qualified to do it. And now just look. Go right ahead. I'm just interjecting on you guys.
Sister Swan, you have people right there with you in D.C. They're in your Region 3 as well. I would think that there will be contact. And Maryland. And this is what, on our website, we will have these regions broken down and the contact person in each region. We're putting this information on our website because it's an information site. Although it's an e-commerce site too, it's an information site. So people can, when they're in doubt as to their approach, they can go on the resource tab and get the information. So I say that to say that this is one, you probably already know someone in the District of Columbia because you got Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, D.C., and West Virginia in your region. And that's a pivotal area region because there's a lot of support going in there into Region 3 because that's the nation capital in that area. So, you know, they got to keep that looking good and everybody. I wanted to say that Sister Joyce, FEMA was created to lead the nation's effort in preparedness.
Okay.
That's what they were created for back in 1979.
Okay.
So they've been in existence since 1979, but very few people in America are prepared for a natural disaster. But it's all about awareness, conscious awareness, and that's one of the areas that we're really going to talk about a great deal in the training, the difference between being aware and being consciously aware.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes,
so thank you for that wonderful report. Brother Bilal, when you send me that email, I'll get back with you and let's talk about it because there might be some things that we can get out of that other than just the announcement itself, okay?
Yes, yes.
Some distance we can get out of it.
Okay.
So I'm excited to hear from Sister Swan. I got my notepad, Sister. So
okay.
Come on.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to thank you very much and thank the New Africa Business Association for allowing me to present this part two. It's going to be in a series, as you guys know. The water series was presented. Hope you have your pen and pencils and your notepads handy. And, of course, as you said, it's a lot. And so by contacting us via the information site, these things can be presented to you, to the audience in clarity. I know sometimes pencils can't go as fast as what I'm going, but nevertheless, tonight we're going to talk about disaster preparation involving food. Since we've already talked about water, let's talk about what we do in disaster preparation and, of course, as far as food is concerned. And, of course, this is dealing with the family. It starts with the family, and it extends to going into the extended family, which is our communities. And as we know, the extended family, in our case, will go from individual families to community into the region. So all of that becomes family. So tonight, let's talk about what will we do in basic family preparations for these disasters. And this, of course, is presented step by step, as you guys know. So pencils ready, pens ready, here we go. First, as we said, basically you want a three-day supply. Now, just as we needed at least a three-day supply in water from the family household situation, let's get a three-day supply of non-perishable food. You want to purchase canned foods, preferably purchase canned foods that are small cans. Purchase canned foods that do not require electricity to open them. Ideally, purchase canned foods where they have the snap-open top. If not, and even so, I should say, be sure to have a manual can opener. Next, select foods that are very compact. Sometimes the cans might be small, but they might be sort of large, and you know, in terms of size. So make sure they are as small as possible, because sometimes you might be required to evacuate. And the smaller and lighter things are, the easier it is for you to survive when you have to leave your home. Next, you want to select foods that require no preparation for cooking. However, if you do have foods that need to be heated, be sure that you pack a sterno. Also, along with that, if you're going to have things that need to be heated, you know the next thing you need. Be sure you have matches. However, this is very important. For your matches, even though they come in these regular containers, be sure to put them in something plastic, waterproof, Ziploc, because as soon as they're wet, I need not tell you anything more. So don't just trust that buying the matches and having them in their self-containers is enough. A little water will destroy your efforts there. Make sure they are very thoroughly waterproofed. Next, try to, in your foods, to choose salt-free. The best thing to have is salt-free crackers. Choose whole grain. You're looking at the health of what you're choosing. Whatever you're choosing, try to make it whole grain. It's much healthier. Try to choose high liquid content food. That's going to be sort of like a substitute sometimes for the water that you need. And the body is going to definitely be rejuvenated each time you put something liquid in it. So make sure that can content, too, is high liquid. Next, milk. Try buying the powdered milk. Of course, that's going to mean that you're going to have a little bit of extra water that we talked about from our last presentation. It's worth it, because your powdered milk is going to, as you already know, extend much further than just buying milk. It's going to eventually not be safe anymore. When you get your meats, make sure they are ready to eat. Make sure they are dried. Make sure they're dehydrated. And make sure they are not salty. Salty things are going to make you want to drink your water, and that will deplete your water supply. Dried, dehydrated, not salty for your ready-to-eat meats, if you're a meat eater. Myself, I'm a vegetarian, so I eat them both. Okay, fruits and vegetables. Make sure they are dried and dehydrated. We love the fresh fruits and vegetables. It's not going to work in your disaster preparation. Make sure they are dehydrated and, of course, dried. However you're going to do that, that's going to go a long way. And kids love it. They think they're eating candy. Okay, staples. Yes, you do want to have packets of the salt, pepper, sugar. Now, remember when we go to many times we get our little fast foods or eating out, and they give us those darling little packets, tiny little packets. Don't throw them away anymore. Many times they get thrown away, not anymore. Get yourself a large, maybe gallon-sized Ziploc container and keep those salts and pepper. See, they're lightweight. Put them in those Ziplocs. They're ready to just snap up and go if you have to evacuate, and they're easy to go into that Ziploc when you're at home. So save them. Now make sure they don't get thrown away anymore. They're so very important to have those. And make sure they're in your plastic container, Ziploc. Because, you know, they also come in paper. So as soon as water hits them or anything that's going to be, if you're out in the rain and it hits them, that's the end of your fun. So make sure they are safe from anything that's going to cause them to get wet. Now, for your high-energy foods, you definitely want to have foods that are high-energy. What are some of those? Pack your peanut butter. Pack your jelly. Now, remember, these things come in those little packets. Remember, we said the lighter they are, the easier it is for you to get up and get out. Not to mention, when you're at home, you are making sure that people are not overeating the supplies of food. So try to get the ones that are in the packets. Crackers, we talked about those, in packets, hopefully. If they're not in packets, put them in those little small snack-sized Ziplocs. Granola bars, trail mix, but these small packets are going to be your best way of having that supply rather than some big bag of stuff. Vitamins, medical supplies, special dietary needs. You know what is in your own home in terms of the needs for the dietary things, so make sure you have them inventoried and make sure they are readily available to grab and go in case you do have to leave home, but also make sure that whatever you need, dietary needs and even those medical needs, make sure that that's going to be at the top of your list of needs for those in your families who have to have that special attention. Now, we know we've got to have comfort foods. Anytime there's a disaster, there's going to be stress, there's going to be that anxiety, there's going to be all kinds of feelings all over the place, especially with the little ones, but we grown-ups and start acting like children when these kind of things happen because, you know, we just panic out. So make sure you have comfort foods. What are some comfort foods? Cookies. Don't get the great big giant cookie. Kids going to fight over it anyway. Get the tiny little cookies, and they go a long way, but they will satisfy those youngsters who don't understand what's going on anyway. Tiny little cookies for them. Hard candy. Sweetened cereals. And you know what I would suggest there? With your sweetened cereals, get those little dollar store Ziploc packets and put the cereal in the packet so they don't go into a bigger box and then, you know, just pig out. All make sure that those things are packaged so that everybody gets an opportunity to have some of that. And then anything that's dehydrated too. And, of course, you'll want your coffee and you'll want your teas. And that will go back to whether you want to have that hot water and the styro thing for heating up your coffees. Now, basically, these things, the interesting thing about... I'll wait until their phone is answered.
No, that's my background. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay, dear. All right, thanks. Now, one of the things I want to say about what I just said with the three-day supply, ideally, if you can, pack both. In other words, when I say pack both, pack for both your home, and remember we said in case of flight, in case of evacuation, if you can get as much of this in two parts, home and car, because sometimes when we have these things in our home, they might be on the shelf, they might be in the basement, they might be in the attic, they could be anywhere, and you won't have time to grab them up. When you hear that emergency thing for get out in the next 10 minutes, you won't have time to grab these things. So as much as possible, try to have, I don't care what it is, a suitcase or a chest, or just put it in the trunk anyway, if you can, have it in two parts. Same thing that I said to you tonight about what to have, try to have it double. This one is for the house. This one is for the car. So you can get in that car and go. Let me see, what are some more things that would be good? And we're going to talk some more next week about what you can actually do in terms of that car preparation too, in more detail in your disaster planning. But so what I would suggest is, when you are picking up these things, just, I know it means gas has gone up now tremendously, but if you can buy these things little by little. And maybe you'll even want to categorize what you're going to buy. Today I'm going to buy for these small cans, and maybe next time you're going to buy for your snacks. But I would suggest, don't go out and try to buy all this stuff all at once, but start right now, day by day, or maybe afternoon and then evening shopping, or when someone is going to go out with the car anyway, have that little list of, well, pick up these few things. And in no time at all, this long list will be filled in no time. But if you go out and try and get it all at once, well, we know what that grocery bill will look like. So start now, little by little, little by little, little by little, and in no time at all, you're going to have all this stuff just like you want it. But anyway, main thing is just keep a positive attitude. There's always going to be the rainbow after the storm. So think about the rainbow. And then, you know, just be prepared for the storm. And things will get better and better and better. Half of it is your outlook, to remember that. Of all the stuff we talk about with disaster preparation, prepare your state of mind. Because if your state of mind is awry, all of these things aren't going to matter anyway, because that same attitude is going to impose itself on whoever's around you. Keep a positive attitude, and then be prepared. Love you all, and I'll see you all next week when we talk about first aid and how to do disaster preparation in first aid. Love you guys.
Okay, no, you can't get away just yet. We need to ask you some stuff.
Okay.
You know, and like I said in our opening statement, and like I said, no one is exaggerating anything here. Because we're talking natural disasters, exaggeration is cannot be a part of this conversation. But in our opening statements, we talked about the disaster that just occurred in this area last night in Bowie, Maryland, just 15 or 20 minutes, about a half an hour from where I live. And, of course, we know Bowie and Annapolis is just right on each other's borderline. So we, and I went and took a look for myself. We went through there, and like we said, an EF1 tornado came through and looked like all the trees, looked like the forest was sort of cleared out by the wind. And, Almighty God spared, because I don't know how those homes was not hit. These huge trees fell all over the place. I mean, but it didn't hit no, and even though the trees was falling right in front of one's homes, no one's homes was actually hit. Sister Swan, and the way reason I brought that up is because when you're telling us now about some of the things that we need as far as our natural disaster, and a 3-day supply. Just think of those folks who was fortunate last night, but just think of they if the trees had hit their homes, had the trees put them in a disaster in a disastrous situation. Just think, this is why you need this 3-day supply that all that Mr. Swan just mentioned, because this could happen to us. As a matter of fact, there's another disaster coming through here tonight, they tell us.
Sure.
So I need, and you want to know something? My disaster plan is not in order, but I'm serious. Like Ms. Swan said, I know I have these disasters in my home. But what happens if I have to sort of live out of my car for 3 days or my home is totally destroyed? You're right on, and it just goes to show.
I want to share with you, you were talking about those fallen trees. Well, let me see, it's maybe 5 or 6 months ago. It might be closer to a year because, you know, I live in a forest, and the whole neighborhood is called a forest. Well, as I was sitting in my family room, you know, that's a family room, sunroom, so that whole area of my home is all glass. I just happened to be sitting in the part away from the glass, and next thing I knew, a tree was coming to our home. And I mean, I got as far back as I could, but and the tree eventually fell right there in my you know, I'm on a hill, and it fell right up to that glass room.
Wow.
And of course it got my neighbor's yard, and it got my yard and a little bit of the 2 yards behind us. It was a huge tree. And here is what I want to explain to everybody, though. Here again, thank God, it did not touch a single home. It fell in each of our parts of that tree was in each of our 4 yards. You want to hear the good news or the bad news?
Go right ahead.
Want to hear
the good news?
Okay, I'll give you the good news. Well, you heard the good news. It didn't hit our home.
Yeah.
But let me tell you this. And, of course, check in your own regions. But I'll bet you the same thing's going to happen in each of your regions. Guess what? Your insurance will cover if it hits your home or shed or any structure of your that belonging to you on your property. It will cover that. Guess what it will not cover? If it is only on your land and it hits your bushes and your other trees and your flowers and your garden, they will not cover one bit of that. They will only cover if a structure is hit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
got
pretty common.
That's very common. Good to know because,
absolutely.
Because here again, we talk about having these disaster preparations. You'd be surprised how many people do not have the money to cover cutting down that big tree and then having that thing, you know how they put it through the machine and they turn it to sawdust? Who has that? You're not only talking about water supply and food supply and first aid supply and clothes and all those other supplies. Who has money supply? But you are either going to be stuck with a tree in your yard or you'd better come up with that money.
Right. That's right.
Absolutely. Well, you know,
we weren't hit by a tornado. We were hit by a straight wind. If you all haven't hit one of those, we were hit by just a straight wind. But see, that's a wind that comes up almost like a tornado, but it just comes up out of nowhere in a strong wind force that hits in seconds. Straight wind.
Well, you know, we are now faced with this heat dome concept that's going across the country.
and this is which is the extreme heat. And we understand that it could last for several weeks moving across the country. And there will be more trees falling as a result of that because there's a great deal of moisture under that dome, and that moisture settles on the vegetation and settles on the ground, and it weakens the soil. And so we're going to have other things as a result, not just from the wind, but all as a result of this heat wave. We used to call it a heat wave. Now it's called a heat dome. But we can certainly see it happening.
Sure. It loosens the roots of those big trees.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And because that moisture settles in.
Yeah, Brother Aziz, I'd like to thank Sister Swan for her presentation and tell her that what you presented there about the foods that we should prepare for is very, very critical. And I hope that our listeners were paying attention because, as you said, and I'm familiar with what you were saying in terms of the foods and how to minimize what you carry, but still get those foods in that has a high protein value and all that. What the information that you gave us tonight, I just wanted to tell our listeners that the information that you just gave us about the food preparation was an excellent presentation. It was right on point, and the foods that you suggested was right on point and excellent. That salt, as you said, which most people don't think, and I said, look at the science there. When you drink all that, when you have a lot of salty type foods, it's going to make you thirsty. And you're going to go into your water supply and drink that up. So thank you very much, Sister Swan, for that presentation. And I hope our audience was listening to it and got the value of everything that you presented to us tonight.
Thank you
again.
And I look forward to next week, too, and making presentation three.
Thank
you. If I might add, brothers and sisters, you know, as it comes in, it has to come out. Don't forget your tissues, your toilet tissues and, I guess, paper towels and things of this nature, because trying to crumble up newspapers, rubbing those newspapers together, you know, that gets old after a while. So, sis,
well, thank you for going into presentation three because presentation three is going to first.
I don't want to get ahead of
it's a lot to it, but I just want to say that sort of thing will be in your first aid supplies.
Okay, very good. I'm on mute.
I didn't put it with food because we don't want to be eating the toilet tissue. Charmin has its place.
I'm not trying to get ahead of taking anybody's, but, no, as it come in, it got to come out. So I just want to say that. But if it's in the first aid,
that'll be with our first aid supplies because tonight was on food, and I didn't want to make Charmin part of our food.
Okay,
I hear you. Thank you. Sister, I want to say, Sister Joyce, Brother Bilal asked me what was the most important thing to take on Hajj. And you know what I told him? Toilet paper.
Absolutely.
Everything you could take there, toilet paper would be your most important thing to take with you on Mars.
Yeah, because trying to crumple up a brown paper bag gets old.
Think about COVID. What was the very first thing that went in short supply when COVID hit us?
You know, Brother Aziz, you just brought up a perfect example of what, and that's not a disaster. That was just everyday living. But in a desert, if you're not prepared in the desert, there is nothing out there for you. Nothing. Not even the grass or what you said, the paper bag. And
that's
the
right.
There's just nothing out there for you. And so when I went out there on Hajj and was out there in that desert, and because you went before me, I was prepared. Mm-hmm. I was prepared for a disaster that if you're not prepared for, the desert can take your life.
That's
the
right.
The desert can take your life. And so, again, that's what these disasters can do. They can, if you're not prepared, unfortunately, and I know what Sister Aisha was saying last week, one of the things that, many of the things that the disaster can cause, and she named quite a few, but I think I thought about it and I reminded her that the biggest thing that disaster can cause is taking your life. And so
absolutely.
So with that said, and I'm gonna turn it back over to you again, Sister Aisha, but I do want to say our listening audience, those of you who have been listening and haven't been sharing in, thank you for your patience. We do have all of our mics open. So if you wish to interject, join in, or what have you, got comments, any questions, we ask you to join because when it comes to saving our lives, and we're talking about millions of people, we're not talking about states, we're talking about regions. And like Sister Aisha was teaching us, and she was just giving an example of Region 3 and how big it is and how many millions of people is in those four or five states. This is what you're going to be learning and training, how to get prepare for disasters that are coming, and how you can prepare for the relief of the disaster after it's over. So with that shared, Sister Aisha, I'm going to go right back to you. And I know many of them, we do have a look like a full schedule. And so you can especially start having folks that has out. I know we sent out a flyer. I'll be sending it out constantly telling you how to register. But there's nothing like getting it right from the horse's mouth, or in this case, our sister's mouth. So, Sister Aisha, I'm going to go right back to you.
Well, you know, I have, since the schedule went out, of course, we have an individual who registered for the 21st. And we need to get, and I have been told by a number of people that they are putting their groups together for the 30th and the 26th. Now, interesting, the 21st is on a Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And we use Thursday and Tuesday of July to see what kind of audience we could get through the week. And I think that we're going to get a good audience those days. The other days in July, as you can see on the schedule, is for a Saturday. So we are excited to see that there are people, and usually the work people who register for workshops through the week are the people who work and they get off late, and they, you know, at 5, and they want to do relax at night, and they do in this society. They will do a webinar. They'll do a training for an hour in the evening. And so we just want people to realize that if you can't make it on Saturday in the month of July, you have a Thursday and you have a Tuesday that you can also register for. And we're hoping to get our West Coast people by having 8 o'clock Eastern time. And that'll give them, 5 o'clock Pacific time. And so we want to move all the way across the country, because when we sit at the table our representatives, Black Wall Street Summit will be there also, and others will be a part of what we're doing here with what Black Belt Wall Street is doing. We want to say we represent the entire country because we have a constituent base all over the country. That's the kind of strength that we want to take to FEMA, not just one region, but all 10 regions.
Right.
And I do believe that we can do this because people don't want to hear about disasters, and that's understandable. You don't want to hear about a problem or a heartache or something that's going to disturb, you know, your sense of balance, and especially your economic balance. But if we're being bombarded with it, we cannot stick our hands in our ear and say, no, 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 I don't want to hear about it. We're going to have to say, all right, let's get out there, and we're going to have to confront this situation. But we do that because we want to make our lives better. We want to be responsible for ourselves and do whatever it takes for the survival of our families. I'm not looking for FEMA or anybody else to step in and save my family. It first starts in my household, in my husband's household. That's where it starts. And this is the position that we have got to take, folks. And if we don't take the position to save ourselves, now that everything is coming at us, this new monkeypox, all the viruses, you know, the economic, look at what is going on in the environment, the economic downfall of this society. It's under a great deal of pressure. Individual families, you know, emotional strain. All of these things are coming at us at one time. We've had issues in the society all our lives, but look at the magnitude of what we are dealing with now. We have never had to deal with the environment the way we're having it now and the way it's going to take place in the future. So even the nature, the natural environment is rebelling against the things that have gone, that man has perpetrated, you know. So we've got to deal with it or we're going to perish. And we're going to be like the people at Katrina, bless their hearts. They had to wait 3 days before FEMA got to them. They were totally at the mercy of FEMA getting to them. You know, we know that God is always in control. Allah is always in control. But we don't want to be like that anymore, and we don't have to be. And those were some highly educated people, but they were not prepared. And according to FEMA, they're still not prepared. So what is it going to take to wake them up? And like I said, in the training, this is what we talk about. Everybody's aware that they are natural disasters. Every adult, functioning adult knows that we are having natural disasters, environmental disasters. Most of them are man-caused because of global warming, greenhouse gases, we know that. But the point is we're having them. But people are still not preparing themselves. And 2% since 2013 is a terrible, terrible number. And FEMA, I think that they are embarrassed that they have not been able to mobilize the society to be prepared since they have been in existence all of these years. So if there are questions for anyone, please let me know.
Our mics are open. We welcome your comments.
Yes, go ahead.
A couple of things. We know, it sort of reminds me of the TV show, The Haves and the Have-Nots, on a different level of that same terminology. We know that no matter what we do, there are going to be some people who just will not prepare. And those
That's
people
correct.
Who do not prepare are going to be the very ones who are going to take away from you what you have prepared for. So we must also be cognizant of that mentality that's out there. It's not going to be all people who are going to look after their families and their extended families. They're going to look after what you have, and they're going to be determined to take that away from you. And we'll talk about, even during our sessions, what that all entails. Now, I do know that over the years with the, and this isn't all homeless people, but even in the homeless realm, you have those who are community-minded, and you have those who could care less about community. One of the main things is when people went into those shelters in the homeless communities, rather than fend for themselves wherever they could lay on a bench or whatever, those who were isolated from the shelters fared better in their little personal belongings than those who went to the shelters, thought they had solace there and could sleep, only to find out when they woke up, both bag and shoes were gone. And the main thing they choose is your shoes. And that was in winter times. So we have to also understand that even when we have to be taken from our homes and go into what they call shelters and, you know, places of solace and so forth, not everybody in those places are on your side. So that's another thing we need to address in terms of the safety factor of, are you going to fend on your own as best you can? Now, here we go into another area of, if you left your home, what kind of shelters can you set up for yourself? I mean, they might be ramshackle, but it's better than having all of your stuff taken out from under you while you try to get 3 hours of sleep. So that is yet another thing we have to look and put into the equation, because believe me, you're going to have, and I'm not talking about haves like a lot of money, but haves in terms of those who have prepared, and the have-nots, which have not done a darn thing but kept an eye on what you have so they can take it.
Well, that, of course, we know that that's going to be the situation. That's the situation now, even before the disasters. So we have to be vigilant, but we still, if we have to, if we are a family and we have to evacuate, we're going to talk to our children and tell them the precautions that they have to take in that kind of environment. I have been in a shelter before, and not as a resident of the shelter, but touring the shelter. And it is not a good experience. But you can make it work. There is some security in most shelters, especially the ones that the larger organizations like the American Red Cross and some of the other organizations maintain. So they do. But the truth is inevitable that many, many people in the society will be in shelters, and some will not be able to leave those shelters in 3 days, and some will not be placed in permanent housing, and they will be transported from, one state to another, from one shelter to another. And that's the issue of housing recovery. And so there are several steps involved in the recovery effort. And you're put in a temporary shelter, hopefully for 3 to 5 days, and then you go to a more long-term shelter. And then after that long-term shelter, then you possibly, if the numbers work for you, are able to go to a temporary housing and then into permanent housing. So it is a step-by-step process, and that's the way the system is set up. But one of the things we will tell you in the training, make sure you have a utility bill in your package of information. And the purpose of that utility bill is that you can apply for assistance. In order to apply for assistance, you have to show or prove that you have been in a permanent situation, housing situation.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you have that bill, your electric bill, a water bill, or some bill with you. Because you're going to have to prove all, you're going to have to prove yourself, who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes beyond, when you're talking about housing, it goes beyond just your identification. Housing is associated to utilities, surprisingly. Maybe not so surprisingly. But if you got a light bill or water bill in your name, then you are, you had permanency. And so that qualifies you. That's some of the qualification for getting housing assistance in the event of a disaster. So we need to, these are the things that we have not been exposed to, because sometimes our group of people, we are given assistance, but we don't know the ramification of the assistance. And then sometimes we're given assistance, but we are not given the amount of assistance that we need to sustain ourselves. But we are given some assistance, something.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to stop having that game played on us, because we're going to get, I do believe, and by the grace of Allah, when you finish this first training, you will know as much or be able to talk the language of disaster preparedness, climate change disaster preparedness, to anyone in FEMA, to anyone in the state. I have talked to many of the state mitigation, they're called state hazard mitigation officers throughout, you know, the U.S. And they got jobs, but they came out of college and got jobs, but they don't know that much about disaster preparedness. They know about the legalities of the regulation, but they don't know about disaster preparedness. And they will be the first one to tell you, I don't know that much. I was talking to one a couple of days ago, and he said, no, we don't know much about disaster preparedness or disaster recovery. We know regulation, and that's what they are there to know. But we're here to let them know that there's a mandate to involve the community. And as this last week I stated about the report that said, they're even calling us the grassroots community. Can you imagine that?
Mm-hmm.
You know how long ago we have been called the grassroots? Now they're back in their reports calling us the grassroots again and stating that we need the participation of the grassroots, not as just participating, but on the decision-making level. And so when we go, when we have the opportunity as a group, we're remind FEMA of the studies that they pay for with our tax dollars. And those studies told them you need to involve the grassroots community in the decision making, at the decision making level. So
it's very much common sense, isn't it? Because people who have lived, they've lived high off the hog, what do they know about survival? It takes those who have been through the struggle and are still in the struggle to tell people what it's like and what to do about it. You cannot go to people who are educated and living well and living sumptuously to say, how shall we solve this problem? Of course not. They don't even know what you're talking about. So you're absolutely right. You have to go to the source of those who have been through that particular, and it doesn't just mean disasters. It just means people who have had to struggle and seen how life is when you have to have your nose to the grindstone to survive. They are the ones who can tell you what to do.
Absolutely.
And Sister Aisha, would you share with the audience, please, about the allocations, the funds and allocations that the federal government from last year to the present.
Yes.
And if you would share some of that information, I think what we're talking about now can really bring show value as to why we need large numbers. Society.
Yes. Yeah. Well, let's start back from 2005, and I go back that far because once I said earlier how long FEMA had been in existence, you know, since 1979, and they have been doing the studies, trying to get this thing right, right? And also 40 years ago, the United Nations Hazard Mitigation Council stated that hazard mitigation and preparedness has such a minute increase in the world. And they are the number one international group that studies and reports on climate change. FEMA is the number one U.S. group that is created to lead the nation's effort in preparedness and mitigation, okay, and, you know, protection and whatnot. So the funds from FEMA, from the nation, just like President Biden just recently in 2021, add an additional $3.5 billion in hazard mitigation grant programs to increase resilience to climate change impact across the U.S. Now, that is in 2021. But getting back to 2005 through 2019, the U.S. government has spent over $460 billion on disaster assistance. This is based on Pew Research. That money was sent to 17 federal agencies, such as HUD, USDA, Department of Education, SBA, and others. To 17 agencies. Now, those agencies, as of this report, which was in 2019, had only spent 49% of their grants. Only 49, this was in 2019. So 1 year, 1.5 years later, the report is not out. But we do know that when I talked to the state mitigation officers, they won't give me that information of whether or not they still have funds. They simply say, we are determined to allocate all the funds in areas in the state and the local and tribal governance. And they are pushed, they're being pushed, I do believe, to get these funds out because the funds had been allocated to them. In 2019 alone, HUD allocated more than $16 billion of community development block grant mitigation funds to 22 states. Now HUD, now remember, FEMA allocates it to the 17 top agencies and HUD is one of them, right? HUD in turn allocated more than $16 billion in 2019 to community development block grant mitigation funds. Isn't that what we are? We are a community developing community dealing with mitigation. Mitigation is preparedness. Mitigation is lessen the impact of something, or the storm. And that, and once I said before, we're going to learn all of these top vocabulary words that we'll be throwing around the way they throw them around. But we'll have greater meaning behind it because we know that we're part of the, quote, underserved population, and which is a new definition that they have given us as well. And we are the ones that are most impacted by the devastation of the storm. But in 2019, HUD allocated more than $16 billion of community development block grant mitigation funds to 22 states and local governments for activities. Now, they were supposed to develop activities to mitigate, lessen, which means to lessen, the impact of future disasters. It has not worked. Whatever they did with those funds, I'm out there every day with them, and I don't see them. And if there's somebody that you all know who sees these funds, or these funds are going through their organization structure, I'll join them and be happy to. But I haven't seen it.
Question.
But we do know. Yes. Go ahead.
Well, looking at that term mitigation, because we know it's been mitigated everywhere but to us. But my question is, how is it that immediate funds were available and allocated to Ukraine? And I assume Ukraine is going to see its devastated buildings and infrastructures very quickly being restored, whereas we're still mitigating since 1979, and nothing has been done. How in the world can you have 50 years of these mitigations, and yet you find immediacy in restoring a non-American state with billions of dollars? The money was immediate. They didn't have to mitigate the money. They didn't have to mitigate how it would be allocated. So Americans all over this country are asking that question.
Yeah. Well, you know, go ahead, brother.
You know, and Ms. Juan, this brought up a question that, you know, we talked about in the early parts when Ukraine first started. More or less, Russia and Ukraine start having their problems and start shooting and killing each other. And, of course, this is a discussion that we talked about, and it's a discussion that we know that to be true. For instance, at some point, you have to get into racist discussions. You have to start talking about racism itself or white supremacy itself. And again, I stutter because I wish it was a subject that I could stay away from. But at the same time, it's a subject that we can't stay away from. This one. Made a beautiful statement. Why is it that monies can be immediately overnight sent to Ukraine, and it's going to be there within 48 hours, somebody's going to say, send it to them and put them on an airplane and take it to them. And of course, that is a disaster that's going on in Ukraine. It's war. It's So, yes, Ms. Juan, you're making a very good point. We know it's a point that something that African Americans have been living with ever since we've been here. And like Sister Aisha's always said, when it comes to a disaster, we are more prepared to deal with disasters than any other Americans in this country. I'm probably more prepared. I can't say more prepared than anyone in the world, but I can certainly say right here in the United States, because we've been under living, most of us, under some sort of disaster all of our life. So
absolutely.
So making the adjustment is something that we can do. I think, though, at this point, and this is why we are circling the wagons and forming our organizations so we can say we have a coalition of a million, hopefully, representatives. And this coalition is it's a coalition because we're all over the country, all with one
That's
voice,
correct.
All saying the
Absolutely.
Same thing. And not
Absolutely.
Only that, we are trained. And so again, we are trained. So again, when it comes to the sister was saying, and that's why I asked her to talk about allocations, because the government cannot allocate its monies because it doesn't have the representatives to help them to allocate the monies. So again, the monies are more or less pending of being allocated. So again. And I'm gonna turn it right back over to you in just a second, sister. But again, we are trained now, or at least we're beginning to be trained. And see, for one who knows something about writing grants, because I have had grants, this shit, I didn't write the grants. We have experts. And the new and Black Belt Wall Street Association, and they're with us. They're on vacation this week. They was going to be with us tonight, who are experts in writing these grants. But they can write the grants, but guess what? When it comes to the language that must go into that grant, that's what we are learning. And it's, remember, it's your grant. You are the one who is going to be representing all of the different regions that are in your region. And of course, we can go out of our regions because those regions that needs to have representation also. This is why we're saying we are going to, and this is what we're actually doing. We're taking the lead on something that has never happened in this country as far as FEMA is concerned. And so, again, like I said, not only are we going to learn the language of the disasters happening and the disaster recovery, but we're going to know those languages. Now, I want to switch it. Before I go back to Sister Aisha, I want to switch back to Miss Williams, out of Oklahoma. Miss Williams, after my saying what I said, and like I said, because you and Sister Aisha are the only ones, I'll just say Sister Aisha knows all about it. But you went in and you learned that how big FEMA is. So now with I'm going to ask you, with what you have experienced, what just think what's going to happen with, and I'm going to specifically say you, when you go in there trained and these discussions that you're going in, and like I said, we should have 100 representatives are like Miss Williams. But right now, it's Miss Williams. And I'm asking Miss Williams, what's going to imagine, or can you imagine, or can you just tell us what you think would happen once you are trained and then go to these meetings? Miss Williams.
Yes, sir, brother. I thank you for that question. And I appreciate the opportunity to, first of all, to be exposed. Because, like I said, FEMA crosses the board into all of those federal agencies. Now, as far as what I would be most interested in, first of all, is the survival of the people. But I feel that I like the part about the civil rights, equal rights opportunities, because, as they say, no one left out. I want to make that possible. I want to make that, as Bernice would say, a realism. A truism, I think the way she's the term. But I think that I would find myself into the air before, during, and after a disaster. Because if we are prepared and we've come to some of these meetings with our Director Swan, then we know some of the things that we should be able to survive with. So I feel, my brother, that I would find myself in the litigation part where they're discussing before, during, and after preparedness.
Okay, very good.
Sister Aisha, I'm going to ship it right back to you, and I'm going to let you go ahead and send that out. And I'm going to just ship it back to you. Again, we do have a full audience. I don't know if we ask you to interject. We got about 10 more minutes before we close the show. But go right ahead.
Let me make a statement as to why we need to be at the table. If you all who have been involved with on the grassroots level for many years, you know that many times when funds come down from the federal government, there are already restrictions on how the funds can be used, right? And if we're at the table, we want to make sure that these restrictions that are put on the grants on how they can be used, and they all have, everything has some restrictions, right? But that those restrictions do not intentionally or otherwise hamper our communities from using the funds that will benefit the needs that are unique to our communities, which includes poverty reduction, increasing wages, affordable housing, transportation, food, water, child care, and many other. And we especially want to be very careful with this whole concept of the 120 million people globally who have been forced into poverty every year as a result of natural disaster. Mm-hmm. We as a people, if we are continually forced into poverty, we will no longer continue to exist. You know, Allah knows best. But we have got to make sure that those restrictions that are put on those grants will not and do not hamper the unique situation in our community, but help us uplift our community. And those unique situations that we are faced with are, in most cases, unlike other ethnic groups. We have extreme poverty, and we don't have affordable housing. We don't have medical care, insurance. Do you know that the average homeowner cannot afford the federal regulated flood insurance. Most African-American right. communities throughout the U.S. are flood zones. They were built in flood zones from the very beginning because the planners during those early days knew that those were flood zones over there. And so they were happy for us to go over there, and they build us houses over there. The other people across town, they wouldn't come. They would not live in those flood zone areas. So they built their communities on higher ground. So all of this has been contrived way before I was born. It was put in place. And that is what we call environmental inequity. They call it, the federal government calls it environmental equity. We call it environmental inequity.
Yes.
We know majority of our communities are in a flood zone. So if flood insurance is something we cannot afford because the premium is unbelievable. So the federal government, when people apply for flood assistance or any type of a disaster assistance, the ones, most of the people who applied, a large percentage, had flood insurance. And so the federal government will match what their flood insurance paid out. And so they acquire greater wealth as a result of the disaster. But across town, we didn't have flood insurance. And so we could only get the bare minimum that was offered as assistance from the disaster. So therefore, our wealth didn't go up. It went down, but across town, theirs went up. So I hope I'm making this clear.
Oh, yes.
So we've got to change this dynamic, or we're going to find ourselves in a worse situation than we are now. So that's why it's important for us to be at the table. To be at the table, we need the numbers. We need the people coming into the class, getting the core training, and learning how to follow this dialogue and participating. And that's what this is all about. Okay?
And like I am going to repeat in our closing here in about 3 or 4 minutes, I am going to repeat, brothers and sisters, we need your registration. But most of all, we need the numbers. And when I say registration, one person can register, and you can have 40 members in your group, and you all can listen to the training simply because you registered and you bought on 40 others in your group. You bought 100 others in your group. Whoever that can come in your group and learn the training. But we need the numbers. We need their names and we need their emails. And another thing, if there are those who just cannot afford the registration at all, Black Belt Wall Street will see to it that if you would bring in a group of at least 5, we will defer that registration fee. So within 90 seconds, I am going to now go to Sister Aisha. You have anything to say within closing, first of all?
No, just get everybody to register for the course. And, of course, we as the training group, we're working on some plans to get that course certified by the federal government. And that it's a long process, and it might take, a long time. But we're working towards that because we need to be able to say you have a certification of a basic preparedness course, and so it will be, your education will be highly recognized. It's going to be recognized because when you open your mouth and you start talking climate change, you're going to know what you're talking about. But we want some credentials. We want some credentials.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much that we can do now. You know, Allah is so merciful to us to open this whole arena up to us. And maybe, maybe some of this is the purpose of all of this. But, you know, folks, we're used to struggling. We have been struggling ever since we've been in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since we have been alive. So, we're not going to give up now. But we know now they need us. And if they recognize that they need us, then we're going to call them to task. But we're going to do it in a different way. We're not necessarily out there on the street now like we used to be. You know, we know another way to do it now. So I encourage you, get the basic information. So when we start having this dialogue on Wednesday night, we can raise it to another level.
That's right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right. Yeah, that's all I have to say. Thank you all.
If you guys don't mind, I do have another question for Sister Swan. Now, I may be getting in ahead of it again in terms of a preparedness. But, you know, I know back in the day when you learned, you know, and here's another dying, something that we maybe should have held on to was Morse code. So if you're in a place that's isolated and you can't get out in terms of communication, will we, you know, like, you know, been able to count the dots and the this and the that and all those different clicks and things? Sister Bernice, do you still remember how to do that? And I know you guys didn't know she was doing this, but when she first came out of school, one of her first jobs was working with Western Union, I think it was Western Union, where she had to do the Morse code translations and things. So I was wondering, how much of that do you still know? And will that be a part of your presentation?
Sister Swan, we're going to have to close out, but I'm asking you, very good question. You can see there's a whole lot of information that's going to be shared. So again,
thank you.